52. Into the Sky. Now, as the Truth Watchers were esoteric in nature, their order being formed entirely of those who never spoke or wrote of what they did, in this lies frustration for those who would see their exceeding secrecy from the outside. They were not naturally inclined to explanation, and in the case of Corberon's disagreements, their silence was not a sign of an exceeding abundance of disdain, but rather an exceeding abundance of tact. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 11, Page 6. Kaladin strolled along the shattered plains at night, passing tufts of shale bark and vines, lifespren spinning about them as motes. Puddles still lingered in low spots from the previous day's high storm, fat with creme for the plants to feast upon. To his left, Kaladin heard the sounds of the war camps, busy with activity. To the right, silence. Just those endless plateaus. When he'd been a bridgeman, Sadius's troops hadn't stopped him from walking this path. What was there for men out here, on the plains? Instead, Sadius had posted guards at the edges of the camps and at bridges, so the slaves couldn't escape. What was there for men out here? Nothing but salvation itself, discovered in the depths of those chasms. Kaladin turned and strolled out along one of the chasms, passing soldiers on guard duty at bridges, torches shivering in the wind. They saluted him. There, he thought, picking his way along a particular plateau. The war camps to his left stained the air with light, enough to see where he was. At the plateau's edge, he came to the place where he had met with the king's wit on that night weeks ago. A night of decision, a night of change. Kaladin stepped up to the edge of the chasm, looking eastward. Change and decision. He checked over his shoulder. He'd passed the guard post, and nobody was close enough to see him. So, belt laden with bags of spears, Kaladin stepped off into the chasm.
Shallan did not care for Sadius's war camp. The air was different here than it was in Sabariel's camp. It stank, and it smelled of desperation. Was desperation even a smell? She thought she could describe it. The scent of sweat, of cheap drink, and of creme that had not been cleaned off the streets. That all churned above roads that were poorly lit. In Sabariel's camp, people walked in groups. Here they loped along in packs. Sabariel's camp smelled of spice and industry, of new leather and sometimes livestock. Dalinar's camp smelled of polish and oil. Around every second corner in Dalinar's camp, someone was doing something practical. There were too few soldiers in Dalinar's camp these days, but each wore his uniform as if it were a shield against the chaos of the times. In Sadius's camp, the men who wore their uniforms wore them with unbuttoned jackets and wrinkled trousers. She passed tavern after tavern, each spitting forth a racket. The women who idled in front of some indicated that not all were simply taverns. Whorehouses were common in every camp, of course, but they seemed more blatant here. She passed fewer parshmen than she commonly saw in Sabariel's camp. Sadius preferred traditional slaves, men and women with branded foreheads, scurrying about with backs bowed and shoulders slumped. This was honestly what she'd expected from all of the war camps. She'd read accounts of men at war, of camp followers and discipline problems, of tempers flaring, of the attitudes of men who were trained to kill. Perhaps instead of wondering at the awfulness of Sadius's camp, she should be marveling that the others weren't the same. Shallan hurried on her way. She wore the face of a young, dark-eyed man, her hair pushed up into her cap. She wore a pair of sturdy gloves. Even disguised as a boy, she wasn't about to go around with her safe hand exposed. Before leaving tonight, she had done a series of sketches to use as new faces, if need be. Testing had proven she could draw a sketch in the morning, then use it for an image in the afternoon. If she waited longer than about a day, though, The image she created was blurred and sometimes looked melted. That made perfect sense to Shallan. The process of creation left a picture in her mind that eventually wore thin. Her current face had been based on the messenger youths who moved in Sadius's camp. Though her heart thumped every time she passed a pack of soldiers, nobody gave her a second glance. Amram was a High Lord, a man of Third Dawn, which made him a full rank higher than Shallan's father had been, two ranks higher than Shallan herself. That entitled him to his own little domain within his liege's war camp. His manor flew his own banner, and he had his own personal military force occupying nearby buildings. Posts set into the stone and striped with his colors, burgundy and forest green, delineated his sphere of influence. She passed them without pausing.
"Hey, you!"
Shallan froze in place, feeling very small in the darkness. Not small enough. She turned slowly as a pair of patrolling guards walked up. Their uniforms were sharper than any she'd seen in this camp. Even the buttons were polished, though at the waists they wore skirt-like takama instead of trousers. Amram was a traditionalist, and his uniforms reflected that. The guards loomed over her, as most Alethi did.
"Messenger?"
one asked.
"This time of night?"
He was a solid fellow with a graying beard and a thick, wide nose.
"It's not even second moon yet, sir," Shallan said, in what she hoped was a boyish voice.
He frowned at her. What had she said? "Sir," she realized, "he's not an officer."
"Report at the guard posts from now on when you visit,"
the man said, pointing toward a small lit area in the distance behind them.
"We're going to start keeping a secure perimeter."
"Yes, Sergeant."
"Oh, stop harassing the lad, have,"
the other soldier said.
"You can't expect him to know rules that half the soldiers don't even know yet." "On with you,"
Hav said, waving Shallan through. She hastened to obey. A secure perimeter? She didn't envy these men that task. Amram didn't have a wall to keep people out, just some striped posts. Amram's manor was relatively small, two stories, with a handful of rooms on each floor. It might once have been a tavern, and was temporary, as he'd only just arrived at the war camps. Stacked piles of creme brick and stone nearby indicated some far grander building was being planned. Near the piles stood other buildings that had been appropriated as barracks for Amram's personal guard, which included only about 50 men. Most of the soldiers he'd brought, recruited from Sadius's lands and sworn to him, would billet elsewhere. Once she got close to Amram's home, she ducked beside an outbuilding and squatted down. She'd spent 3 evenings scouting this area, wearing a different face each time. Perhaps that had been overly cautious. She wasn't certain. She'd never done anything like this before. Fingers trembling, she took off her cap. That part of the costume was real, and let her hair spill around her shoulders. Then she dug a folded picture out of her pocket and waited. Minutes passed as she stared at the manor. "Come on," she thought. "Come on." Finally, a young, dark-eyed woman stepped out of the manor, arm in arm with a tall man in trousers and a loose buttoned shirt. The woman tittered as her friend said something. Then she scampered off into the night, the man calling after her and following. The maid, Shallan still hadn't been able to learn her name, left every night at this time. Twice with this man, once with another. Shallan took a deep breath, drawing in stormlight, then held up the picture she'd drawn of the girl earlier. About Shallan's height, hair about the same length, similar enough build, it would have to do. She breathed out and became someone else. She giggles and laughs, Shallan thought, plucking off her masculine gloves and replacing the one on the safe hand with a tan, feminine one. And often prances about, walking on her toes. Her voice is higher than mine, and she doesn't have an accent. Shallan had practiced sounding right,
but hopefully she wouldn't need to find out how believable her voice was. All she had to do was go in the door, up the stairs, and slip into the appropriate room. Easy. She stood up, holding her breath and living off the stormlight, and strode toward the building.
Kaladin hit the bottom of the chasm in a glowing storm of light. He took off at a jog, spear over his shoulder. It was difficult to stand still with stormlight in his veins. He dropped a few of the pouches of spheres to use later. The stormlight rising from his exposed skin was enough to illuminate the chasm, and it cast shadows on the walls as he ran. Those seemed to become figures, crafted by the bones and branches stretching from the heaps on the ground. Bodies and souls. His movement made the shadows twist, as if turning to regard him. He ran with a silent audience, then Syl flew down as a ribbon of light and took up position beside his head, matching his speed. He leaped over obstacles and splashed through puddles, letting his muscles warm to the exercise. Then he jumped up onto the wall. He hit awkwardly, tripping and rolling through some frill blooms. He came to rest face down, lying on the wall. He growled and pushed himself to his feet, as stormlight sealed a small cut on his arm. Jumping onto the wall felt too unnatural. When he hit, it took time to orient himself. He started running again, sucking in more stormlight, accustoming himself to the change of perspective. When he reached the next gap between plateaus, to his eyes it looked as if he'd reached a deep pit. The walls of the chasm were his floor and ceiling. He hopped off the wall, focused on the floor of the chasm, and blinked, willing that direction to become down to him again. He landed in another stumble, and this time tripped into a puddle. He rolled over onto his back, sighing, lying in the cold water. Krem, that had settled to the bottom, squished between his fingers as he clenched his fists. Syl landed on his chest, taking the form of a young woman. She put her hands on her hips. "What?" he asked.
"That was pathetic."
"Agreed."
"Maybe you're taking it a little too quickly," she said. "Why not try to jump onto the wall without a running start?"
"The assassin could do it this way," Kaladin said. "I need to be able to fight like he does."
"I see. And I suppose he started doing all of this the moment he was born without any practice at all."
Kaladin exhaled softly. "You sound like Tux used to."
"Oh, was he brilliant, beautiful, and always right?"
"He was loud, intolerant, and profoundly acerbic," Kaladin said, standing up. "But yes, he was basically always right." He faced the wall and leaned his spear against it. "Zeth called this lashing."
"A good term,"
Syl said, nodding. "Well, to get this down, I'm going to have to practice some fundamentals. Just like learning a spear." That probably meant hopping onto and off the wall a couple hundred times. "Better than dying on that assassin's shard blade," he thought, and got to it.
Shallan stepped into Amaram's kitchens, trying to move with the energetic grace of the girl whose face she wore. The room smelled strongly of the curry simmering over the hearth, the remnants of the night's meal, waiting in case any light eyes got peckish. The cook browsed a novel in the corner while her girls scrubbed pots. The room was well lit with spheres. Amaram apparently trusted his servants. A long flight of steps led up to the second floor, providing quick access for servants to bring meals to Amaram. Shallan had drawn a layout of the building from guesses based on window locations. The room with the secrets had been easy to locate. Amaram had the windows shuttered and never opened them. She'd guessed right about the stairwell and the kitchens, it seemed. She strode toward those steps, humming to herself, as the woman she imitated often did.
"Back already?" the cook said, not looking up from her novel. She was Herdazian from the accent. "His gift tonight wasn't nice enough. Or did the other ones spot you two together?"
Shallan said nothing,
trying to cover her anxiety with the humming.
"Might as well put you to use," the cook said. "Stein wanted someone to polish mirrors for him. He's in the study, cleaning the master's flutes."
Flutes? A soldier like Amaram had flutes? What would the cook do if Shallan bolted up the stairs and ignored the order? The woman was probably high-ranked for a dark eyes, an important member of the household staff. The cook didn't look up from her novel, but continued softly.
"Don't think we haven't noticed you sneaking off during midday, child. Just because the master is fond of you doesn't mean he can take advantage. Go to work. Spending your free evening cleaning instead of playing might remind you that you have duties."
Gritting her teeth, Shallan looked up those steps toward her goal. The cook slowly lowered her novel. Her frown seemed the type that one didn't disobey. Shallan nodded, moving away from the steps and into the corridor beyond. There would be another set of steps upward in the front hall. She'd just have to make her way in that direction and... Shallan froze in place as a figure stepped into the hallway from a side room. Tall, with a square face and angular nose, the man wore a light-eyed outfit of modern design, an open jacket over a buttoned shirt, stiff trousers, a stock tied in place at his neck. Storms! High Lord Amaram, fashionable or otherwise, was not supposed to be in the building today. Adolin had said that Amaram was dining with Dalinar and the king tonight. Why was he here? Amaram stood looking over a ledger in his hand and didn't seem to have noticed her. He turned away from her and strolled down the corridor. "Run!" It was her immediate reaction. Escape out the front doors, vanish into the night. The problem was, she'd spoken to the cook. When the woman Shallan was imitating came back later, she'd be in a storm of trouble, and she'd be able to prove with witnesses that she hadn't come back into the house earlier. Whatever Shallan did, there was a good chance that once she was gone, Amaram would find out that someone had been sneaking about, imitating one of his maids. Stormfather. She'd only just stepped into the building and already she'd messed everything up. Stairs creaked up ahead. Amaram was going up to his room, the one Shallan was supposed to inspect. "The Ghost Bloods will be mad at me for alerting Amaram," Shallan thought, "but they'll be even angrier if I do that and then return with no information." She had to get into that room, alone. That meant she couldn't let Amaram enter it. Shallan scrambled after him, rushing into the entry hall and twisting around the newel post to propel herself up the stairs. Amaram reached the top landing and turned toward the hallway. Maybe he wouldn't go in that room. She wasn't so lucky. As Shallan scurried up the steps, Amaram turned toward just that door and raised a key, slipping it into the lock and turning it.
"Bright Lord Amaram,"
Shallan said, out of breath as she reached the top landing. He turned toward her, frowning.
"Talesh, weren't you going out tonight?"
Well, at least she knew her name now. Did Amaram really take such an interest in his servants as to be aware of a lowly maid's evening plans?
"I did, Bright Lord," Shallan said, "but I came back.
Need a distraction, but not something too suspicious. Think!"
Was he going to notice that the voice was different?
"Talesh," Amaram said, shaking his head. "You still can't choose between them? I promised your good father I'd see you cared for. How can I do that if you won't settle down?"
"It's not that, Bright Lord," Shallan said quickly. "Have stopped a messenger on the perimeter coming for you. He sent me back to tell you."
"Messenger?" Amaram said, slipping the key back out of the lock. "From whom?"
"Hav didn't say, Bright Lord. He seemed to think it was important, though."
"That man," Amaram said with a sigh. "He's too protective. He thinks he can keep a tight perimeter in this mess of a camp."
The High Lord considered, then stuffed the key back in his pocket.
"Better see what it's about."
Shallan gave him a bow as he passed her by and trotted down the stairs. She counted to 10 once he was out of sight, then scrambled to the door. It was still locked.
"Pattern," Shallan whispered. Where are you? He came out from the folds of her skirts, moving across the floor and then up the door until he was just before her, like a raised carving on the wood. The lock? Shallan asked.
It is a pattern, he said,
then grew very small and moved into the keyhole. She'd had him try a few more times on locks back in her rooms, and he'd been able to unlock those as he had Tin's trunk. The lock clicked, and she opened the door and slipped into the dark room. A sphere plucked from her dress pocket lit it for her. The secret room. The room with shutters always closed, kept locked at all times. A room that the ghost bloods wanted so desperately to see. It was filled with maps.
The trick to jumping between surfaces wasn't the landing, Kaladin discovered. It wasn't about reflexes or timing. It wasn't even about changing perspective. It was about fear. It was about that moment when, hanging in the air, his body lurched from being pulled down to being pulled sideways. His instincts weren't equipped to deal with this shift. A primal part of him panicked every time down stopped being down. He ran at the wall and jumped, throwing his feet to the side. He couldn't hesitate, couldn't be afraid, couldn't flinch. It was like teaching himself to dive face first onto a stone surface without raising his hands for protection. He shifted his perspective and used stormlight to make the wall become downward. He positioned his feet. Even still, in that brief moment, his instincts rebelled. The body knew, it knew, that he was going to fall back to the chasm floor. He would break bones, hit his head. He landed on the wall without stumbling. Kaladin stood up straight, surprised, and exhaled a deep breath, puffing with stormlight.
Nice, Syl said, zipping around him.
It's unnatural, Kaladin said.
No, I could never be involved in anything unnatural. It's just extra-natural.
You mean supernatural?
No, I don't.
She laughed and zipped on ahead of him. It was unnatural, as walking wasn't natural for a child who was just learning. It became natural over time. Kaladin was learning to crawl, and unfortunately, he'd soon be required to run. Like a child dropped in a white spine's lair. Learn quickly, or be lunch. He ran along the wall, hopping over a shellbark outcropping, then jumped to the side and shifted to the floor of the chasm. He landed with only a slight stumble. Better. He ran after Syl and kept at it.
Maps. Shallan crept forward, her solitary sphere revealing a room draped with maps and strewn with papers. They were covered in glyphs that had been scribbled quickly, not made to be beautiful. She could barely read most of them. I've heard of this, she thought. The Storm Warden script. The way they get around the restrictions on writing. Amaram was a Storm Warden? A chart of times on one wall, listing high storms and calculations of their next arrival, written in the same hand as the notes on the maps, seemed proof of that. Perhaps this was what the Ghost Bloods were seeking. Blackmail material. Storm Wardens, as male scholars, made most people uncomfortable. Their use of glyphs in a way that was basically the same as writing. Their secretive nature. Amaram was one of the most accomplished generals in all of Alethkar. He was respected even by those he fought. Exposing him as a Storm Warden could seriously damage his reputation. Why would he bother with such strange hobbies? All of these maps faintly reminded her of the ones she'd discovered in her father's study, after his death, though those had been of Yaakoved. Watch outside, Pattern, she said. Bring me word quickly when Amaram returns to the building. He buzzed, withdrawing. Aware that her time was short, Shallan hurried to the wall, holding up her sphere and taking memories of the maps. The Shattered Plains? This map was far more extensive than any she'd seen before, and that included the prime map that she'd studied in the King's Gallery of Maps.
How had Amaram obtained something so extensive? She tried to work out the use of glyphs. There was no grammar to them that she could see. Glyphs weren't meant to be used that way. They conveyed a single idea, not a string of thoughts. She read a few in a row. Origin, direction, uncertainty. The place of the center is uncertain? That was probably what it meant. Other notes were similar and she translated in her head. Perhaps pushing this direction will yield results. Warriors spotted watching from here. Other groupings of glyphs made no sense to her. This script was bizarre. Perhaps Pattern could translate it, but she certainly couldn't. Aside from the maps, the walls were covered in long sheets of paper filled with writing, figures, and diagrams. Amaram was working on something, something big. Parshendi, she realized. That's what those glyphs mean. Parap, Shenesh, Idi. The three glyphs individually meant three separate things, but together their sounds made the word Parshendi. That was why some of the writing seemed like gibberish. Amaram was using some glyphs phonetically. He underlined them when he did this, and that allowed him to write in glyphs, things that never should have worked. The Storm Wardens really were turning glyphs into a full script. Parshendi, she translated, still distracted by the nature of the characters, must know how to return the Voidbringers. What? Remove secret from them. Reach center before Alethi armies. Some of the writings were lists of references. Though they'd been translated to glyphs, she recognized some of the quotes from Yasna's work. They referred to the Voidbringers. Others were purported sketches of Voidbringers and other creatures of mythology. This was it. Full proof that the Ghostbloods were interested in the same things Yasna was. As was Amaram, apparently. Heart beating with excitement, Shallan turned around, looking over the room. Was the secret to Urethiru here? Had he found it? There was too much for Shallan to translate fully at the moment. The script was too difficult and her thumping heart made her too nervous. Besides, Amaram would likely return very soon. She took memories so she could sketch this all out later. As she did, the writings she translated in passing caused a new species of dread to rise within her. It seemed that High Lord Amaram, paragon of Alethi honor, was actively trying to bring about the return of the Voidbringers. I have to stay a part of this, Shallan thought. I can't afford to have the Ghostbloods cast me out for making a mess of this incursion. I need to discover what else they know. And I have to know why Amaram is doing what he does. She couldn't just run tonight. She couldn't risk leaving Amaram alerted that someone had infiltrated his secret room. She couldn't botch this assignment. Shallan had to craft better lies. She pulled a sheet of paper from her pocket and slapped it onto the desk, then began to frantically draw.
Kaladin jumped off the wall at a careful speed, twisting to the side and landing back on the ground without breaking step. He wasn't going very quickly, but at least he didn't stumble anymore. With each jump, he shoved the visceral panic farther down. Up, back onto the wall, down again. Again and again, sucking in stormlight. Yes, this was natural. Yes, this was him. He continued running along the chasm bottom, feeling a surge of excitement. Shadows waved him on as he dodged between piles of bone and moss. He leaped over a large pool of water, but misjudged its size. He came down, about to splash into the shallow water. But by reflex, he looked upward and lashed himself toward the sky. For a brief moment, Kaladin stopped falling down and fell up instead. His momentum continued forward, and he cleared the pool, then lashed himself downward again. He landed in a trot, sweating. I could lash myself upward, he thought, and fall into the sky forever. But no, that was how an ordinary person thought. A sky eel didn't fear falling, did it? A fish didn't fear drowning. Until he began thinking in a new way, he wouldn't control this gift he had been given. And it was a gift. He would embrace this. The sky was his now. Kaladin shouted, dashing forward. He leaped and lashed himself to the wall. No pausing, no hesitance, no fear. He hit at a dead run, and nearby, Syl laughed for joy. But that was simple. Kaladin jumped off the wall and looked directly above him at the opposite wall. He lashed himself in that direction and flung his body into a flip. He landed going down on one knee upon what had been the ceiling to him a moment before.
"You did it," Syl said, flitting around him. "What changed?"
"I did."
"Well, yeah, but what about you?" Syl asked.
"Everything." She frowned at him. He grinned back, then took off at a run along the side of the chasm.
Shallan strode down the mansion's back steps to the kitchen, thumping each foot down harder than it would normally fall, trying to imitate being heavier than she was. The cook looked up from her novel and dropped it in a wide-eyed panic, moving to stand.
"Bright Lord?"
"Remain seated,"
Shallan mouthed, scratching at her face to mask her lips. Pattern spoke the words she'd told him to say in a perfect imitation of Amram's voice. The cook remained seated as ordered. Hopefully from that position she wouldn't notice that Amram was shorter than he should be. Even walking on her tiptoes, which was masked by the illusion, she was much shorter than the High Prince.
"You spoke to the maid Talesh earlier,"
Pattern said, as Shallan mouthed the words.
"Yes, Bright Lord," the cook said, speaking softly to match Pattern's tone of voice. "I sent her off to work with Stein for the evening. I thought the girl needed a little direction."
"No," Pattern said. "Her return was at my command. I have sent her out again and told her not to speak of what happened tonight."
The cook frowned. "What happened tonight?"
"You are not to speak of this event. You interfered with something that is not of your concern. Pretend you did not see Talesh. Never speak of this event to me. If you do, I will pretend none of this happened. Do you understand?"
The cook grew pale and nodded her head, sinking down in her chair. Shallan nodded to her curtly, then walked from the kitchens out into the night. There she ducked to the side of the building, heart pounding. A grin formed on her face anyway. Out of sight, she exhaled Stormlight in a cloud, then stepped forward. As she passed through it, the image of Amram vanished, replaced by that of the messenger boy she'd been imitating before. She scrambled back to the front of the building and sat down on the steps, slumping and leaning with her head on her hand. Amram and Hav walked up through the night, speaking softly.
"I didn't notice that the girl had seen me talking to the messenger High Lord," Hav was saying. "She must have realized..."
He trailed off as they saw Shallan. She hopped to her feet and bowed to Amram.
"It's no matter now, Hav," Amram said, waving the soldier back to his rounds.
"High Lord," Shallan said, "I bring you a message."
"Obviously, Darkborn," the man said, stepping up to her. "What does he want?"
"He?" Shallan asked. "This is from Shallan Devar."
Amram cocked his head.
"Who?"
"Betrothed of Adolin Colin," she said. "She's trying to update the accounting of all of the shard blades in Alethkar with pictures. She would like to schedule a time to come and do a sketch of yours, if you are willing."
"Oh," Amram said.
He seemed to relax.
"Yes. Well, that would be fine. I'm free most afternoons. Have her send someone to speak with my steward to arrange a meeting."
"Yes, High Lord. I'll see that it is done."
Shallan moved to leave.
"You came this late?" Amram asked. "To ask such a simple question."
Shallan shrugged.
"I don't question the commands of Light Eyes, High Lord. But my mistress, well, she can be distracted at times. I suppose she wanted me on her task while it was fresh in her mind. And she's really interested in shard blades.
Who isn't? Amram mused, turning away, speaking softly. They're wondrous things, aren't they?
Was he talking to her, or to himself? Shallan hesitated. A sword formed in his hand, mist coalescing, water beading on its surface. Amram held it up, looking at himself in the reflection.
Such beauty, he said, such art. Why must we kill with our grandest creations? Ah, but I'm babbling, delaying you. I apologize. The blade is still new to me. I find excuses to summon it.
Shallan was barely listening. A blade with the back edge ridged like flowing waves, or perhaps tongues of fire. Etchings all along its surface. Curved, sinuous. She knew this blade. It belonged to her brother Helleran.
Kaladin charged through the chasm, and the wind joined him, blowing at his back. Syl soared before him as a ribbon of light. He reached a boulder in his way and jumped into the air, lashing himself upward. He soared a good 30 feet upward before lashing himself to the side and downward at the same time. The downward lashing slowed his momentum upward. The sideways lashing brought him to the wall. He dismissed the downward lashing and hit the wall with one hand, twisting and throwing himself to his feet. He kept running along the chasm wall. When he reached the end of the plateau, he leaped toward the next one and lashed himself at its wall instead. Faster. He held nearly all of the stormlight he had left, fetched from the pouches he'd dropped earlier. He held so much that he glowed like a bonfire. It encouraged him as he jumped and lashed himself forward, eastward. This made him fall through the chasm. The floor of the chasm whipped along beneath him, plants a blur to his sides. He had to remember that he was falling. This was not flight, and every second he moved, his speed increased. That didn't stop the feeling of liberty, of ultimate freedom. It just meant that this could be dangerous. The winds picked up, and he lashed himself backward at the last moment, slowing his descent as he crashed against a chasm wall before him. That direction was down to him now, so he stood and ran along it. He was using the stormlight at a furious rate, but he didn't need to scrimp. He was paid like a light-eyed officer of the Sixth Dawn, and his spheres held not tiny chips of gemstone but bromes. A month's pay for him now was more than he had ever seen at a time, and the stormlight it held was a vast fortune compared to what he'd once known. He shouted as he jumped a group of frill blooms, their fronds pulling in beneath him. He lashed himself to the other chasm wall and crossed the chasm, landing on his hands. He threw himself back upward, and somehow lashed himself only slightly in that direction. Now much lighter, he was able to twist in the air and come down on his feet. He stood on the wall, facing down the chasm, hands in fists and light pouring off him. Syl hesitated, flitting around him back and forth.
What?
She asked. More, he said, then lashed himself forward again, down the corridor. Fearless, he fell. This was his ocean to swim, his winds upon which to soar. He fell face first toward the next plateau. Just before he arrived, he lashed himself sideways and backward. His stomach lurched. He felt like someone had tied a rope around him and pushed him off a cliff, then yanked on the rope right as he reached the end of it. The stormlight inside, however, made the discomfort negligible. He pulled sideways into another chasm. Lashings sent him eastward again, down another corridor, and he wove around plateaus, keeping to the chasms, like an eel swimming through the waves, swerving around boulders. Onward faster, still falling. Teeth clenched at both the wonder and the forces twisting him, he tossed caution aside and lashed himself upward. Once, twice, three times. He let go of all else, and amid the streaming light he shot from the chasms out into the open air above. He lashed himself back to the east so that he could fall in that direction again. But now no plateau walls got in his way. He soared toward the horizon, distant, lost in the darkness. He gained speed, coat flapping, hair whipping behind him. Air buffeted his face, and he narrowed his eyes, but did not close them. Beneath, dark chasms passed one after another. Plateau, pit, plateau, pit. This sensation, flying over the land, he had felt this before, in dreams. What took Bridgman hours to cross, he passed in minutes. He felt as if something were boosting him from behind, the wind itself carrying him. Syl zipped along to his right. And to his left? No, those were other windspren. He'd accumulated dozens of them flying around him as ribbons of light. He could pick out Syl. He didn't know how. She didn't look different, but he could tell. Like he could pick a family member out of a crowd just by their walk. Syl and her cousins twisted around him in a spiral of light, free and loose, but with a hint of coordination. How long had it been since he felt this good, this triumphant, this alive? Not since before Tien's death. Even after saving Bridge 4, darkness had shadowed him. That evaporated. He saw a spire of rock ahead on the plateaus, and nudged himself toward it with a careful lashing to the right. Other lashings to his rear slowed his fall enough that when he hit the tip of the spire of rock, he could clutch to it and spin around, fingers on the smooth cremstone. 100 windspren broke around him, like the crash of a wave, spraying outward from Kaladin in a fan of light. He grinned. Then he looked upward, toward the sky.
High Lord Amram continued to stare at the shard blade in the night. He held it up before him in the light spilling from the front of the manor house. Shallan remembered her father's quiet terror as he looked upon that weapon, leveled toward him. Could it be a coincidence? Two weapons that looked the same? Perhaps her memory was flawed. No. No, she would never forget the look of that blade. It was the one Helleran had held, and no two blades were the same. "Bright Lord," Shallan said, drawing Amram's attention. He seemed startled, as if he'd forgotten she was there.
"Yes?"
"Brightness Shallan," she said, "wants to make certain the records are all correct, and that the histories of the blades and plate in the Alethi army have been properly traced. Your blade is not in them. She asked if you would mind sharing the origin of your blade in the name of scholarship."
"I've explained this to Dalinar already," Amram said. "I don't know the history of my shards. Both were in the possession of an assassin who tried to kill me. A younger man. Vaden with red hair. We don't know his name, and his face was ruined in my counterattack. I had to stab him through his faceplate, you see."
"Young man. Red hair."
"She stood before her brother's killer. I—"
Shallan stammered, feeling sick.
"Thank you. I will pass the information along."
She turned, trying not to stumble as she walked away. She finally knew what had happened to Helleran. "You were involved in all of this, weren't you, Helleran?" she thought. "Just like father was. But how? Why?" It seemed that Amram was trying to bring back the Voidbringers. Helleran had tried to kill him. But would anyone really want to bring back the Voidbringers? Perhaps she was mistaken. She needed to get to her rooms, draw those maps from the memories she'd taken, and try to figure this all out. The guards, blessedly, did not give her any further troubles as she slipped away from Amram's camp and into the anonymity of the darkness. That was well, for if they'd looked closely, they'd have seen the messenger boy with tears in his eyes, crying for a brother that now, once and for all, Shallan knew was dead.
Upward. One lashing, then another, then a third. Kaladin shot up into the sky. Nothing but open expanse, an infinite sea for his delight. The air grew cold. Still upward he went, reaching for the clouds. Finally, worried about running out of stormlight before returning to the ground, he had only one infused sphere left, carried in his pocket for an emergency. Kaladin reluctantly lashed himself downward. He didn't fall downward immediately. His momentum upward merely slowed. He was still lashed to the sky. He hadn't dismissed the upward lashings. Curious, he lashed himself downward to slow further, then dismissed all of his lashings except one up and one down. He eventually came to a stop, hanging in midair. The second moon had risen, bathing the plains in light far below. From here, they looked like a broken plate. No, he thought, squinting. It's a pattern. He'd seen this before, in a dream. Wind blew against him, causing him to drift like a kite. The wind spren he'd attracted scampered away now that he wasn't riding upon the winds. Funny, he'd never realized one could attract wind spren as one attracted the spren of emotions. All you had to do was fall into the sky. Syl remained, spinning around him in a swirl until finally coming to rest on his shoulder. She sat, then looked down.
"Not many men ever see this view," she noted.
From up here, the war camps, circles of fire to his right, seemed insignificant. It was cold enough to be uncomfortable. Rock claimed the air was thinner up high, though Kaladin couldn't tell any difference.
"I've been trying to get you to do this for a while now," Syl said.
"It's like when I first picked up a spear," Kaladin whispered. "I was just a child. Were you with me back then? All that time ago?"
"No," Syl said. "And yes."
"It can't be both."
"It can. I knew I needed to find you, and the winds knew you. They led me to you."
"So everything I've done," Kaladin said. "My skill with the spear, the way I fight. That's not me, it's you."
"It's us."
"It's cheating. Unearned."
"Nonsense," Syl said. "You practice every day."
"I have an advantage."
"The advantage of talent," Syl said. "When the master musician first picks up an instrument and finds music in it that nobody else can, is that cheating? Is that art unearned, just because she is naturally more skilled? Or is it genius?"
Kaladin lashed himself westward, back toward the war camps. He didn't want to leave himself stranded in the middle of the shattered plains without stormlight. The tempest within had calmed greatly since he started. He fell in that direction for a time, getting as close as he dared before slowing himself, then removed part of the upward lashing and began to drift downward. "I'll take it," Kaladin said. "Whatever it is that gives me that edge, I'll use it. I'll need it to beat him." Syl nodded, still sitting on his shoulder. "You don't think he has a spren," Kaladin said. "But how does he do what he does?"
"The weapon,"
Syl said, more confidently than she had before.
"It's something special. It was created to give abilities to men, much as our bond does."
Kaladin nodded, light wind ruffling his jacket as he fell through the night. "Syl, how to broach this? I can't fight him without a shard blade." She looked the other way, squeezing her arms together, hugging herself. Such human gestures. "I've avoided the training with the blades that Zyle offers," Kaladin continued. "It's hard to justify. I need to learn how to use one of those weapons."
"They're evil," she said in a small voice.
"Because they're symbols of the knight's broken oaths," Kaladin said. "But where did they come from in the first place? How were they forged?" Syl didn't answer. Can a new one be forged? One that doesn't bear the stain of broken promises?
Yes.
How? She didn't reply. They floated downward for a time in silence, until gently coming to rest on a dark plateau. Kaladin got his bearings, then walked over and drifted off the edge, going down into the chasms. He wouldn't want to walk back using the bridges. The scouts would find it odd that he was coming back without having gone out. Storms. They'd have seen him flying out here, wouldn't they? What would they think? Were any close enough to have seen him land? Well, he couldn't do anything about that now. He reached the bottom of the chasm and started walking back toward the war camps, his stormlight slowly dying out, leaving him in darkness. He felt deflated without it, sluggish, tired. He fished the last infused sphere from his pocket and used it to light his path.
"There's a question you're avoiding," Syl said, landing on his shoulder. "It's been 2 days. When are you going to tell Dalinar about those men that Moash took you to meet?"
He didn't listen when I told him about Amaram.
"This is obviously different," Syl said.
It was, and she was right. So why hadn't he told Dalinar?
"Those men didn't seem the type who would wait long," Syl said.
"I'll do something about them," Kaladin said. "I just want to think about it some more. I don't want Moash to get caught in the storm when we bring them down." She fell silent as he walked the rest of the way, retrieving his spear, then climbed the ladder up onto the plateaus. The sky overhead had grown cloudy, but the weather had been turning towards spring lately. "Enjoy it while you can," he thought. "The weeping comes soon. Weeks of ceaseless rain. No Tien to cheer him up. His brother had always been able to do that. Amaram had taken that from him." Kaladin lowered his head and started walking. At the war camp's edge, he turned right and walked northward.
"Kaladin?"
Syl asked, flitting in beside him.
"Why are you walking this way?"
He looked up. This was the way towards Satius's camp. Dalinar's camp was the other direction. Kaladin kept walking.
"Kaladin? What are you doing?"
Finally, he stopped in place. Amaram would be there, just ahead, inside Satius's camp somewhere. It was late, Noman inching toward its zenith. "I could end him," Kaladin said. "Enter his window in a flash of stormlight, kill him, and be off before anyone has time to react. So easy. Everyone would blame it on the assassin in white."
"Kaladin?"
"It's justice, Syl," he said, suddenly angry, turning toward her. "You tell me that I need to protect. If I kill him, that's what I'm doing. Protecting people. Keeping him from ruining them. Like he ruined me."
"I don't like how you get," she said, seeming small. "When you think about him, you stop being you. You stop thinking. Please?"
"He killed Tien," Kaladin said. "I will end him, Syl."
"But tonight?" Syl asked. "After what you just discovered? After what you just did?"
He took a deep breath, remembering the thrill of the chasms and the freedom of flight. He'd felt true joy for the first time in what seemed like ages. Did he want to taint that memory with Amaram? No. Not even with the man's demise, which would surely be a wonderful day. "All right," he said, turning back toward Dalinar's camp. "Not tonight." Evening stew was finished by the time Kaladin arrived back at the barracks. He passed the fire, where embers still glowed, and made his way to his room. Syl zipped up into the air. She'd ride the winds overnight, playing with her cousins. So far as he knew, she didn't need sleep. He stepped into his private room, feeling tired and drained, but in a pleasing way. Someone stirred in the room.
Kaladin spun, leveling his spear, and sucked in the last light of the sphere he'd been using to guide his way. The light that streamed off him revealed a red and black face. Shen looked disturbingly eerie in those shadows, like an evil spren from the stories.
Shen, Kaladin said, lowering his spear. What in the—
Sir, Shen said. I must leave.
Kaladin frowned.
I am sorry, Shen added, speaking in his slow, deliberate way. I cannot tell you why.
He seemed to be waiting for something, his hands tense on his spear, the spear Kaladin had given him.
You're a free man, Shen, Kaladin said. I won't keep you here if you feel you must go, but I don't know that there is another place you can go where you will be able to make good on your freedom.
Shen nodded, then moved to walk past Kaladin. You are leaving tonight?
Immediately.
The guards at the edges of the plains might try to stop you. Shen shook his head.
Harshmen do not flee captivity. They will see only a slave doing some assigned task. I will leave your spear beside the fire.
He walked to the door, but then hesitated beside Kaladin and placed a hand on his shoulder.
You are a good man, Captain. I have learned much. My name is not Shen. It is Relaine.
May the winds treat you well, Relaine.
The winds are not what I fear, Relaine said.
He patted Kaladin's shoulder, then took a deep breath as if anticipating something difficult, and stepped from the chamber.